Good. Om Sahana Vavatu, Sahanao Bhunaktu, Sahavidyan Karavavahai, Tejasvi Navadhi Tamastu Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om. Very good. Welcome back, and today we begin our study of Chapter 9, one of the very important. Every chapter is important in its own way. Chapter 9 is especially important for reasons that we'll discuss. We'll begin, as always, with some chanting. These slides are available on our website if you want to have a copy of them. Repeat after me. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Idam tu te guhyatamam, idam tu te guhyatamam, pravakshyamyana suyave, pravakshyamana, jnanam vijnana sahitam, jnanam vijnana, yajnatva moksha seshabhata, yajnatva raja vidya raja guhyam, raja vidya raja. Pavitramidam uttamam, pavitramidam pravak pratyakshavagamam dharmyam, pratyakshavagam susukam kartum avyayam, susukam kartum ashraddhana purusha, ashraddhana dharmasyasya parantapa, dharmasyasya parantapa. Aprapya mam nivartante, aprapya mam. Mrityu samsara vartmani, mrityu samsara. Maya tatamidam sarvam, maya tatam. Jagadavyakta murtina, jagadavyakta. Matsthani sarva bhutani, matsthani sarva. Nachaham teshvavasthitaha, nachaham teshvavas, nachamatsthani bhutani, nachamatsthani. Pashyame yogam aishvaram, pashyame yogam hai, bhutabhrin nachabhutastho, bhutabhrin nachab. Mamatma bhuta bhavanaha, mamatma bhuta yatha kashastito nityam, yatha kashastito vayu sarvatra gomahan, vayu sarvatra tatha sarvani bhutani, tatha sarva. Matsthani tyupadharaya, matsthani tyupadharaya, sarva bhutani kaunteya, sarva bhuta. Prakritam yanti mamikam, prakritam yanti kalpakshaye punastani, kalpakshaye punastani. Kalpadau vrisajamyaham, kalpadau vrisajam, prakritam swamavashtabhya, prakritis swamavasht, visrajami punaf punaha, vrisajami punaf, bhuta gramamimam kritsnam, bhuta gramamimam, avasham prakritir vashata, avasham prakritir. Nacha mam tani karmani, nacha mam tani karm. Nibadnanti dhananjaya, nibadnanti dhanam. Udasinavarasinam, udasinavara. Asaktam teshu karmasu, asaktam teshu. Mayadhyakshena prakritihi, mayadhyakshena prakritihi. Suyate sacharacharam, suyate sachara, hetu nanena kaunteya, hetu nanena kaunteya. Jagadvipari vartate, jagadvipari vartate. In our meditation session, many of you were there, we mentioned the Mahashakti makes the world turn. Jagadvipari vartate. That's exactly what it means. This is Mahashakti. Okay. We're beginning this new chapter, chapter 9, Raja Vidya, Raja Guhya. Raja Vidya, the king of all wisdom, the best of all wisdom. Raja Guhya, the best of all that is secret, of all that is difficult to understand. The Raja here, king, means the highest. Shankaracharya actually gives a little different meaning because there's a verbal root, rajate, iti, which means to shine. So the shining knowledge, the shining secret. But I think the common meaning is kind of more direct. So the best wisdom, the best of secrets. And since this is a new chapter, it would be nice to get an overview, which we'll do now by seeing this English translation that we've used a time and time again. The first, slightly condensed, as you know, it's composed in the same meter. The first verse you can listen and repeat, and then we'll chant together. So this is a summary in English of chapter 9. The Blessed Lord said, unto you I shall now declare, unto you I shall now, of all knowledge the most obscure, of all knowledge the most, knowing this highest sacred truth, knowing this highest, you will be freed from suffering. You will be freed. We'll chant together. This entire vast universe is pervaded by me unseen. All things exist because of me, but I do not depend on them. Just as the atmosphere above, though enormous, abides in space, in the same way, please understand, everything here abides in me. All creatures at the end of time unto my nature must return. When the world's next cycle begins, once again I will send them forth. Nature, under my sole control, produces everything that is animate and inanimate. Thus the cycle of life proceeds. The ignorant perceive me not. Since I assumed a human form, they fail to grasp my higher truth as a great Lord of all that is. But those whose minds are vast indeed recognize my nature divine. They worship me most faithfully, knowing me as the source of all. Always chanting my holy names, committed firmly, striving hard, bowing down with great reverence, ever absorbed they worship me. Others through knowledge worship me, regarding me in diverse ways, as being one or manifold, or manifesting as all forms. I am the rites and sacrifice, I am the fire and offerings, I am the Vedas mantras too, and the sacred syllable home. I am the Lord and highest goal, shelter, refuge, and friend as well, source, sustainer, destroyer too, the everlasting reservoir. Wanting to dwell in heaven's realms, they worship me through Vedic rites. Indra's kingdom they can achieve, and there enjoy divine delights. having enjoyed that paradise, when all their grace has been consumed, they return to this mortal plane. Seeking pleasure, they come and go, but those who pray me steadfastly, even those praying other gods, full of faith, they all come to me. Even if they break Vedic rites, a flower, leaf, water, or fruit, anything given with true love, all such offerings I accept. From those whose minds and hearts are pure, whatever you eat or you do, whatever you give or sacrifice, whatever penance you perform, do as an offering to me. Oh, one more. Even if the most wicked ones worship me with one-pointed minds, they soon acquire righteous hearts. None devoted to me can fail. Worship me with your heart and mind. Offer sacrifice and respect. Be devoted entirely. You shall certainly come to me. And I think that's the last one. Yes. Very good. So there we have an overview of the chapter. You can see the subject matter opens with who is that Ishvara, the Lord to whom we pray, and then moves on to how do we worship that one. So these topics of who is Ishvara and how to worship Ishvara are really the focal point of the middle six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. Remember, we spoke before how the overall organization of the Bhagavad Gita has the middle six chapters devoted to bhakti. So that began with chapter 7. And in chapter 7, we had a very profound inquiry into who is Ishvara. Then chapter 8, which we just concluded, you noticed was a little bit of a detour since it got off on this topic of death. So chapter 8 is kind of a little bit of an aside, since it deals with death in particular rather than bhakti in general. But now at chapter 9, we come right back on point, as they might say. And it continues through chapter 10, where we talk about Ishvara's glories. Chapter 11 is that Vishvarupa Darshana, the revelation of the divine form. And of course, chapter 12 is Bhakti Yoga. So these are the chapters we have ahead of us. Some very nice study. So with that in mind, we can return to the beginning of chapter 9 and begin our study properly. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Idam tu te guhyatamam, Idam tu te pravakshyamyanasuyave, pravakshyamana. Jnanam vijnana sahitam, jnanam vijnana. Yad jnatva moksha se shabhat, yad jnatva. Good. Some chapters begin with Arjuna's question. Some chapters don't. So this chapter is not introduced by a question from Arjuna, but rather Sri Krishna coming back to the earlier subject matter of bhakti. So he begins by saying, te unto you. Unto you, Arjuna, pravakshyami. Looking at the next line. Pravakshyami, I will tell. Pravakshyami, I will tell. Te unto you, idam, this. This what? Guhyatamam. Whoa, that gets your interest going. That which is most secret is guhyatamam. We've actually discussed this before. That word guhya, secret, comes up in several times in the Bhagavad Gita with regard to these teachings. And we don't want to misinterpret it. I mean, if it's secret, does it mean don't bring anyone to class with you? This is secret. Shh! How silly is that? So secret we discussed this long ago, but let's go back to that. It's secret in two senses. The most legitimate sense is that which is most secret is that which, even when you say it loudly, it remains secret. Isn't that the case? The Bhagavad Gita has been around for a long time. How many really get it? It's easily accessible in so many forms, including what we're doing here today. So that which is guhyatamam, that which is most secret, is that which can be expressed very plainly and yet be understood, yet not be understood. Of course, what really is secret is not the Gita. What really is secret is what lies within us. Ishvara's presence within us is truly guhyatamam. How remarkable it is, just as a general introduction and a little connection to our Vedanta class on Tuesday nights, how remarkable it is that everyone says, everyone meaning all Hindus, all of you, will say that everyone is divine, but then having said that and having known it, that understanding doesn't seem to be present in our minds and hearts. When you look in the mirror, do you see a divine being? When you look at your obnoxious next-door neighbor, do you see a divine being? We say divine, but we don't get it. In that sense, it's a guhyatamam, most secret. The other way, a more profound way, which we discussed in the Tuesday class, is that we all say that the source of happiness is within. Happiness comes from within, is the American expression. Happiness comes from within. You all know that. Everyone expresses it. Is that fact revealed in your day-to-day activities? And this is what we discussed briefly on Tuesday night. We asked, how if you know that the source of happiness lies within, in a given day, how much of your effort is spent finding that happiness that lies within? How hard are you working at that? Versus how much of the time is your attention directed outside where happiness does not lie? This is what Sri Krishna means by guhyatamam, that which is most secret. It's secret because even though we know it conceptually, we don't get it. It remains secret. There's one other way of understanding this word secret. And it's in the sense of, in Sanskrit, we call it stuti, praise. If you want to get somebody's attention, isn't it often the case that, oh, did you hear that secret? And what? You know, that really can get people interested the moment you call it secret or rare. You know, when you see these commercials in magazines and on the TV, you know, it's not just something is a good product, but this is, oh, do you know where I saw this? Do any of you use this eBay to buy things? Once in a while, I go looking for things on eBay. Not often, but I do. And you can really find some quite interesting Indian art available on eBay. You'll be very surprised at some of the things that are available there. So if I'm looking at some Indian artwork on eBay, the person will, you know, the description, they give you the description, and part of the description will always be this rare artwork. Rare means it's one of a kind. You won't find this anywhere else. You have to look for it here and here only. Isn't that kind of the same as secret? It's a way of increasing its value. Well, here, the value of what is about to be unfolded, especially at the verses 4 and 5, which we'll probably get to, at least beginning today, are some of the most important in the entire text. And they come at the beginning of this chapter. So to say guhya tamam in the sense of this is something very special, it's very rare, it's very important. That's absolutely true. So, te, unto you, Arjuna, idam guhya tamam, this which is most secret, this, what is most secret? Jnanam. The jnana sahatam, this knowledge. And I'll come to that in just a moment so I don't forget the word up above. I will tell you, Arjuna, you who are anusuyave unto you, the anusuyava, the one who is anusuyu, the one who doesn't have anusuya, which has several meanings. Here, anusuya refers to an attitude. Do you have, sometimes you have this situation, there we go, with a teen child. Many of you have raised children, so remember when your children were teenagers, or imagine your children, as imagine you giving instruction to a teenage child, and you're giving some instruction, do this, don't do that, that kind of thing. Do they want to hear you? If they could, they'd put their fingers in their ears. Of course, they can't do that. But they do it inside anyway. That is, they tune you out, as it were. So to tune you out is the attitude that we're talking about here. Here, asuya here means that attitude of not wanting to listen. That attitude of not trusting you, that attitude of not believing you, that attitude of just not wanting to listen. Arjuna, on the other hand, is very eager to listen. Arjuna has a real purpose in listening. Arjuna is suffering like anything. How did the Bhagavad Gita open? Arjuna's vishada, his sorrow, his struggle, his suffering. So we saw so intensely Arjuna's suffering. He's looking for a solution to his misery, and therefore he is listening with great interest, with great dedication, with great shraddha. And that's indicated here by saying that Arjuna is anusuyu. Unto the one who is anusuya is anusuyave, to him. To Arjuna, who is free from not wanting, free from this problem of not wanting to hear, or to put it positively, Arjuna, who is very engaged and eager to hear. Unto him, pravakshyami, Sri Krishna says, I will teach you. Idam guhyatamam, this which is most secret. What is most secret? Jnanam. Now, this is a word in Vedanta which is perhaps more misunderstood than just about any other word, because it's a very general term. Jnanam, of course, means knowledge. You can translate it as wisdom, but just mean wisdom is just kind of an elegant word for knowledge. But there's so many kinds of knowledge. And whatever Sri Krishna means by knowledge would be determined by the context. So here, is Sri Krishna teaching Arjuna? Depending on the context. Is the Bhagavad Gita a book on computer programming? Not so far as I know. If it were a book on computer programming, jnanam would mean knowledge of programming. But the Bhagavad Gita is not a book of computer programming. It's our spiritual text. So what does jnanam mean in this context? I'll just share with you how Sri Shankaracharya explains it. Sri Shankara says, sakshat moksha prapti sadhanam. He says, that which is the sadhana, the means for moksha prapti, the means for gaining moksha. Sakshat, the direct means for gaining moksha. The direct means for gaining moksha is knowledge? Many people will say, how can that possibly be? Moksha is the ultimate goal of life. How can mere knowledge be Sakshat Moksha Prapti Sadhanam. How can mere knowledge be the direct means to gaining moksha, to gaining complete freedom from all suffering and freedom from suffering in any future life? How can knowledge alone do that? And the answer to the question, which is what this whole text is about, the teachings of Vedanta are all about, and the answer to the question is this. If the problem... I'll put it this way. If your true nature is not already divine, then you need some means of bringing that divinity down from the heavens, so to speak, and inserting that divinity into your heart and soul. Sounds silly, right? It should sound silly because that divinity is already present in your heart, in your soul. You are already that divinity, or as the Rishi said, tat tvam asi. You are that. And I like to point out the verb, asi. And what's interesting about the verb is it's in the present tense. It's not in the future tense. The Rishi did not say, tat tvam bhavishyasi. You will become that. Never said. The Rishi said, tat tvam asi. Abhi. Now, here and now, you are that. Which means... you don't have to become that. In fact, you can't become that. You already are that. You don't have to attain that. You don't have to find that. You don't have to get that. You don't have to go to some marketplace and purchase that. You don't even have to go to eBay for that one. You already are that. Then if you already are that, that divinity, full, complete, unborn, uncreated, unlimited, free from death, free from misery, if you already are that, then what is sakshat moksha prapti sadhanam? If you already are that, what is the direct means to gaining moksha? If you already are that, what is the problem? The problem is, as most of you understand already, you don't know. You already are that, but there's something about yourself that you have yet to discover. That's amazing. It's amazing to think that in all these years that we've lived, there can still be something about ourselves that we haven't discovered. You think you've discovered everything about yourself. Chances are your spouse has discovered even more about you. The things that you don't know, your spouse knows. It works like that. But there's something you don't know, perhaps. That divinity. That aspect of you, which is unborn, uncreated, unchanging. Something about you which is unchanging. Obviously, we're not talking about the body, the mind, the personality. We're talking about your true self. That consciousness within, which is your essential nature, that consciousness which is present right now, the consciousness which knows what's happening in your mind right now. You know that consciousness, but there's something about that consciousness you don't know. You don't know the true nature of that consciousness. If you knew the true nature of your consciousness to be divine, to be full, to be complete, to be limitless, if you already knew that, you would say, muktoham, I am liberated. If you don't know that, you will not say, muktoham, I am liberated. So therefore, the problem that prevents you from gaining liberation, the problem is, in a word, ignorance. Ignorance, in Sanskrit, ajnanam. If the problem is ajnanam, ignorance, what is the solution? Buy something from eBay? Seriously, though, if the problem is ignorance, if what holds you back from the highest spiritual goal is ignorance, what will lead you to that highest goal? There's only one thing, and that is the particular knowledge that can destroy that ignorance. That's why Shankaracharya makes it so clear. Sakshat moksha prapti sadhanam jnanam. That particular knowledge, which is the direct means to gaining liberation, that knowledge. So not just any knowledge, this knowledge. Knowledge of your true nature. Knowledge of your true nature, which is non-separate from Brahman. Big discussion. That's not our topic right now. But that's the knowledge that's going to be unfolded in this chapter. Vijnana sahitam, along with vijnana. So knowledge along with vijnanam, along with vijnana. What is the difference between jnana and vijnana? Sometimes there's no difference. In this case, Sri Shankara explains vijnana. In fact, usually he says vijnana, he translates as, and as he does here, anubhava yuktam, that which is connected to your experience, is anubhava yuktam, connected to experience. That's a very important term, because jnanam can sound very theoretical or abstract. And certainly, lots of knowledge is theoretical and abstract. Knowledge of programming computers, etc., it's all theoretical, abstract stuff. Even in a Vedanta class, if we start talking about your body and mind, etc., your individuality is being composed of five koshas, pancha kosha, and we start unfolding all this fancy Vedantic stuff, it can sound pretty theoretical, and if it remains theoretical, it doesn't really help you much, right? So Sri Shankaracharya makes it very clear that the jnanam we seek, the knowledge we seek, is vijnana sahitam. It is, or anubhava yuktam, is Sri Shankara's expression, which means knowledge connected to our experience. That's literally what it means. Anubhava, experience. Yuktam here means connected. So knowledge which relates to your experience. What experience? The experience you're having right now. What kind of experience are we having right now? Well, we have the experience of being a human being. Right now, it happens to be a fairly pleasant experience, I hope. but that's not always the case. There are times when our ordinary human experience is absolutely horrible and miserable, as it is for Arjuna right now. Arjuna is not having a good day. Are you having a good day? Yes. We're all having a good day. On the day that this was first taught to Arjuna, on that battlefield, he was not having a good day. Imagine your day begins by facing your own family members and getting ready to kill them. Imagine if your day began like that. And imagine if your next 18 days were going to continue to be like that. So, to this teaching, better address Arjuna's experience of suffering, his misery. If it fails to address his suffering and misery, I will be the first to say that this teaching is useless. Can I say that again? Because I really mean it. If these teachings fail to address our experience of suffering, these teachings are useless. Obviously, it's not the case. But so, Sri Shankara makes it very clear. Sri Krishna says, vijnana sahitam, Shankara explains, anubhava yuktam. These teachings are relevant to our experience of suffering in life. So, again, pravakshyami, Sri Krishna says, I will tell, te, unto you, Arjuna, anusuyave, because you have a good attitude, I will tell you, idam guhyatamam jnanam, this most secret of knowledge. Well, secret means the best of knowledge, which is that knowledge which can lead to moksha, vijnana sahitam, that knowledge which connects to your experience, which solves the problem of suffering. Yet jnatva, knowing this wisdom or knowledge that Sri Krishna is about to teach, Mokshase, Arjuna, Mokshase. You will be freed. Notice that verb is in the future tense. Mokshase shubhat, ashubhat. Mokshase, you will be freed, ashubhat. We have to put the in because these are the grammatical rules. You will be freed, ashubhat, from all that's undesirable, from all that suffering and misery in life. Ashubhat, from all that is undesirable, mokshase, you will be free. That's in the future tense. Tattvamasi is not in the future tense. What is the difference? Tattvamasi is a statement about your true nature, right? Tvam, you, your true nature, is tat, is that divinity, that fullness, that completeness. But when Sri Krishna is addressing Arjuna here, is Sri Krishna teaching Satchidananda Atma, or is Sri Krishna teaching Arjuna? Well, obviously, Sri Krishna is teaching Arjuna. And here's the situation. For Arjuna, Atma is already full and complete. Atma is already free. Arjuna is not. Why? Ignorance. Arjuna's ignorance, your ignorance, same. That ignorance is present now. That ignorance can be removed with the help of these teachings, and that process of removal takes some time. Therefore, the verb is in the future tense. O Arjuna, mokshase. You will be freed. Ashubhat, from all that is undesirable. Then, Raja Vidya Raja Guhyam Raja Vidya Pavitram Idam Uttamam Pavitram Idam Pratyakshavagamam Dharmyam Pratyakshavagamam Susukam Kartam Avyayam Susukam Kartam. So this knowledge, Raja Vidya Raja Guhyam. By the way, that's the title of the chapter. The title of the chapter comes from the first two words of the second verse, that Raja Vidya, that king of all knowledge, that best of all knowledge, that Raja Guhyam, that which is most secret, it is Pavitram. Pavitram means holy, but it means holy in the sense, holy or sacred, but it specifically means that which is holy or sacred because of being purified. Pavitra refers to that process of purification that's required to make something holy or purified. Now, this idam uttamam, idam, this knowledge, this Raja Vidya, this best of all knowledge, which is uttamam, the highest of all knowledge, is in fact, connect those two words, uttamam pavitram, that which is most purifying. And we saw a similar expression back in chapter 4. Some of you will remember. Nahi jnanena sadrisham pavitramiha vidyate. I think chapter 4, we saw that verse. That which is most purifying is knowledge. And that same expression is coming here. That which is most purifying is knowledge. And let's just reflect on that briefly. We talked about it at great length then. I think we spent a whole class perhaps talking about it. But just to reflect on that briefly, how can this knowledge be the most purifying? And I like to make there's a nice metaphor we can give. Everyone knows that you take a bath in a Ganga to become purified. Good. Having taken a bath in a Ganga and being purified of all your sins, that's it, right? You don't have to do anything else your entire life. Well, wait a minute. That can't exactly be true. Because as your life continues, you commit some papa karmas. You become impure, so to speak. And so you need another bath. So you can imagine you have to take a bath again and again and again, which is why some people choose to live on the banks of the Ganga. Of course, it's also true that even in a place like Varanasi, along the banks of the Ganga are some pickpockets who live there on the banks of the Ganga. And what do they do all day long? Excuse me. What do they do all day long? They're out in the marketplace doing their craft, they'll call it. Picking pockets, supporting themselves. And what's interesting is, every morning, where do they go for a bath? They go bathe in a Ganga, and then they pick pockets in the marketplace, which is why then the next morning they have to go back and bathe in a Ganga. This goes on and on and on and on. They go on committing sins, papa karma, so they require ongoing purification. Of course, it's not just the pickpockets who continue to make mistakes in life. We all make mistakes in life. We all commit sins. We all cause problems. Okay. So, to bathe in the Ganga as a form of, I guess the technical term is prayaschitta. Prayaschitta is any act that you would do for the sake of removing your sins. A very general term. So you can do some prayaschitta, you can bathe in the Ganga, you can say some prayer, you can, you know, give some charity or do some seva, whatever. Any punya karma can help soften the effects of those papa karmas. So this is one way of purification. But what we can observe is that it's temporary. You become purified, but only temporarily. It's exactly like when you bathe each morning. Your body becomes purified. Your body becomes purified for all time and for a few hours. So by the next day, you'll take another bath. Why? Because that which has been purified doesn't stay purified. So we're leading up now to a very interesting observation. Then if ordinary purification purifies you for a while, that which is uttamam pavitram, the most purifying, should purify you once and for all. It's done. It's over. Can you imagine taking a bath and never needing to bathe again? Not possible. Or better example, how about in your kitchen? You wash a pot and it stays clean forever, even though you use it. How can that possibly be? But that is really what's being stated here. That which is uttamam pavitram, supremely pure, we'll translate it loosely, is that which, having been purified, never needs purification again. And we're talking about jnanam, knowledge, which leads to that kind of purification, having gained which, no further purification can ever be required. How can that possibly work? And if you can answer that question, good for you. You've really understood a lot. But it's subtle, so let me explain it. Your true self, Satchidananda Atma, that consciousness, is incapable of being stained by sin, by karma. It is eternally pure. Sri Shankaracharya likes to say, it is nitya shuddha buddha mukta svabhavaha iti atma. Sri Shankara likes that expression. That atma is nitya shuddha, eternally pure. Nitya buddha, eternally enlightened. Nitya mukta, eternally free, liberated. Atma. So if atma is nitya shuddha, eternally pure, it means it didn't need purification in the first place. It's always pure. Then why would one take a bath in the Ganga? Why would one say a prayer, do some charity? Because one doesn't know oneself to be that Satchidananda atma. Therefore, purification becomes necessary, absolutely necessary. But suppose, with the help of his teachings, you discover that truth of yourself which is incapable of being stained by sin. Having made that discovery, This is uttamam pavitram. With that discovery, you discover yourself to be nitya shuddha, eternally pure. Therefore, that knowledge which made you discover that you are eternally pure, that knowledge that made you discover your essential divinity, that knowledge is uttamam pavitram, that which is most purifying, because having made that discovery, you don't need to make that discovery again and again. You discover once and for all that which is divine. Okay. And further talking about, in this verse, he describes that knowledge. The knowledge which was referred to in the opening verse, that jnanam vijnana sahitam, that knowledge that relates to your experience is described here. It's called Raja Vidya, the highest knowledge. It's called Raja Guhya, that secret knowledge. It's called Uttamam Pavitram, that which is most pure. And it's described here as Pratyaksha Avagamam. Avagama means that which is accessible. Avagamam, that which is accessible. Pratyaksha literally means to your senses. Pratyaksha avagamam, interpreting it very strictly, would mean that which you can see, hear, taste, touch, or smell, that which is available to your senses. Of course, Atma is not available to your senses. You can't see it. If you're trying to discover that inner divinity, you won't see it. Even, I think doctors call them endoscopes. You poke it inside some hole in your body. You poke it inside and look around. If you had an endoscope and you poke it inside, you're not going to find this one. Nor can you hear it, smell, taste, or touch this one. You know that very well. Yet, Sri Krishna says, Pratyaksha Avagamam, that which is accessible as though to our senses. And he means it. And that seems kind of mutually, it seems puzzling. Seems somewhat paradoxical. It's not. But it may seem paradoxical. How can you say that Satchidananda Atma, which after all is formless, right? How can that which is formless, nirguna, without qualities, without shape, without any attributes, that which is attributeless, how can that possibly be pratyaksha avagamam, immediately accessible? I'll paraphrase that expression. It is immediately accessible. In what sense is Atma immediately accessible? Tell me, are any of you conscious or not? I think you're all conscious. I don't think anyone's fallen asleep yet. That's good. You're all conscious. You've heard me say this before. That consciousness is not some ordinary thing that you happen to possess. That consciousness happens to be Atma. Really? Do you get that one? That consciousness present here and now in this ordinary experience, that consciousness is not ordinary. That consciousness is the inner divinity. That's what's to be discovered. And that's what we're doing here today, is trying to discover the true nature of that consciousness. But none of you doubt that consciousness. That consciousness is immediately present in this experience. Therefore, Sri Krishna rightly says that inner self, that true self, is pratyaksha avagamam, immediately accessible. Now, you might, one last question here, and you might, I thought this is a chapter on bhakti. I thought we're trying to understand who is Ishvara, the God of the universe. Correct. How will we understand the God of the universe? Well, first of all, you have to find him. Where will you look? Now, most of you understand the God of the universe is everywhere. Okay. Where? That's the problem. Yes, the God of the universe is everywhere, but where is that God of the universe discovered in the most immediate experiential way? You can discover to some extent on an altar. You can discover to some extent in a temple, in any sacred place, whatever place you consider sacred, to some extent. But the place you can most completely discover that God of the cosmos, the location where that God is discovered, is within. So that's why we're referring then to that which is within, that which is pratyaksha avagamam, that which is immediately accessible, that which is dharmyam, dharmic, that which is the essence of dharma. By the way, you know the most fundamental meaning of dharma. Dharma has so many meanings. The most fundamental meaning of dharma, dharyate iti dharmaha, that by which the universe is sustained, the basis for all, that which supports the universe, is dharma in its very direct meaning. So that which is dharmyam. And, oh, this is really good news. Susukam kartum. You'd think if this is something so profound, after all, uttamam pavitram, extraordinarily purifying, you'd think, you go back to that eBay example. If something is ordinary, it costs $5. If something is rare, it costs $500, right? Something ordinary, $5. Something rare and extraordinary and exquisite, be ready to pay much more, $500. So here, we're not talking about anything which is ordinary. We're talking about something which is extraordinary. And if it's extraordinary, you might think, oh my gosh, how am I ever going to get that? A lot of people feel that way, right? The rishis could discover all this stuff. I'm an ordinary person. How can I, of all people, how can I make that discovery? Well, here Sri Krishna makes it very clear. You can make that discovery because it is susukam kartum. It is easy to do, literally. Sukam. Sukam here means easy. Susukam, really easy. Kartum, to do, to accomplish, to gain. Susukam kartum. It is easy to accomplish, easy to discover. Why is it easy to discover? Because it's not out there. If it were located in Varanasi, or up in the Himalayas, or in some remote place, it would take some effort to get there. In fact, not just effort, how much does an airline ticket take and all of that? So it'll take some effort and some money to reach it. But if what we're looking for is already within you here and now, how do you need an airline ticket? Where do you have to go? What do you have to do? That's what he means. Susukam kartum, it's easy to gain or accomplish. Extremely easy. Susukam, the most easy to gain or accomplish, because it's here now as your true nature, as your divine nature. Now, he has one more word. Susukam kartum, that which is easy to get, then we think, oh, if it's easy to get, it's not very useful. Have you noticed that when you buy something, suppose you buy some kitchen gadget, and you have a choice of a $5 kitchen gadget or a $20 kitchen gadget. If you buy the $5 gadget, it works for about a week, and then it breaks. If you buy the $20 gadget, it works, and it continues to work for some more time. Eventually it breaks, but it works for more than a week. So that which is easily accessible might be cheap and flimsy and it won't last. You might think if it's susukam kartum, if it is very easily gained, then it might be something that's not permanent or not very useful. So Sri Krishna ends with one more word. All of these words qualify this knowledge, the knowledge that's being taught in this chapter, which is susukam kartum. It's easily gained, but it's not cheap and flimsy. It is avyayam. Imperishable. Imperishable means when you really get it, and put the underline under the word really, when you really get it, you will be transformed, period. You undergo a process of transformation, an irreversible process of transformation, but when you really get it. And to really get it means we have to keep going. In fact, to really get it, we better go for the next verse, because we have some ways to go to really get it. So we'll keep going. Then. Ashraddhana purusha, ashraddhana dharmasyasya parantapa, dharmasyasya par aprapya mam nivartante, aprapya mam mrityu samsara vartmani, mrityu samsara. Ashraddhanaha purushaha asya dharmasya parantapa. Before we saw that word anasuya, anasuyu, Arjuna was anasuyu. Arjuna had a proper attitude. And this verse, first half of this verse, really comes back to that same topic. In order to get this particular knowledge, this knowledge of God is what Sri Krishna is saying here. In order to gain this knowledge of God, there are certain prerequisites. Do you think just any? Suppose that pickpocket in Varanasi happens to see on the ground a book, picks up this small book, opens it up, Bhagavad Gita. And our pickpocket reads a couple of pages and throws it aside. Do you think the few pages the pickpocket reads is going to do anything? In order for these teachings to go in, we need to be prepared for these teachings to go in. To use a technical Vedantic term, we have to be adhikaris. Adhikari means one who is prepared. And the best way to, the example I've given many times to explain this is, remember when you were in college, you looked at the college catalog, there was such and such a course, but for that such and such a course, there were certain prerequisites that you have to take first. If you don't take those prerequisites, you're not ready for that particular text. In the same way, for this knowledge, this Raja Vidya, this kingly, this king of all knowledge, this best of all knowledge, for this knowledge there are certain prerequisites. And one extremely important prerequisite is referred to here, Ashraddhana Purushaha. Purushaha, people who are Ashraddhana. Shraddha means faith in general. I'll talk about that more in a moment. Shraddha in general means faith. Shraddhadhana means one who has faith. Ashraddhadhana, those who do not have faith. Those purushaha, those people who do not have faith. Asya dharmasya, asya, in this. Dharmasya, in a spiritual teaching. Those who do not have faith in a spiritual teaching. Parantapa, O Arjuna. Those people, aprapya mam, aprapya, having failed to gain what? Mam, Sri Krishna says, me. Having failed to gain me, they failed to gain me. Sri Krishna says, those who lack shraddha fail to gain me. And how is Sri Krishna acquired? Through this knowledge. That's what this chapter is about. So now we can say, those who lack shraddha fail to gain this knowledge. Shraddha is an absolute prerequisite for this knowledge, which is why we saw back in chapter 4, Sri Krishna said, shraddhavan labhate jnanam. One who has faith gains knowledge. Now, the faith that's mentioned there is not blind acceptance. Blind acceptance does nothing. If you say, oh, whatever Sri Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, I accept it. What, what does that mean? What good does that do? It's not meant to be accepted, it's meant to be understood. Suppose someone is explaining to you something on a computer, if you want to send an email, you have to do this. And you say, okay, I believe you. I accept it. Wait a minute. That kind of knowledge is not just meant to be accepted or believed. It's not a matter of blind acceptance. It's a matter of you have to get it so that that knowledge becomes useful to you. Bhagavad, this knowledge is the same. So let's be very clear that Shraddha in this context does not mean blind belief or mere acceptance. What it does mean is an open mind dedicated to making this discovery. An open mind. You've all had the experience, go back to the teenager example I gave before, that you're telling the teenager what they should and shouldn't do. Are their minds open? We don't know. Oftentimes they're not. Sometimes we don't want to hear. We don't want to understand. We're not motivated to understand. That is ashraddhadhana, someone who is ashrad. In fact, it's a good example. That teenager that you're trying to tell that teenager to, how about, I don't know what. You're trying to tell your teenager to drink less Coca-Cola. How's that for as a very ordinary kind of example? And you're telling the teenager you should drink less Coca-Cola because of this, because of that, because of that. And the teen says, okay, mom, I get it. Sound typical? Okay, mom. That is ashraddhadhana. They say, okay, mom, not that they understood anything. It means you can stop telling me this now. I've heard enough. This is ashraddhadhana. So that attitude, someone who has that attitude, obviously, you're not going to get anything out of it. So Sri Krishna is just making that very clear. Ashraddhadhana purushaha, those people who lack faith, those people who do not have an open mind and dedicated to making a discovery, dedicated to this understanding, those people who don't have faith, dharma, asya dharmasya, in this spiritual teaching, parantapa, o Arjuna, aprapya mam, failing to gain me, failing to discover me, Sri Krishna says, failing to discover that divinity within oneself, nivartante, they return. Return means what? Like you return home after coming to our Shabodha Center, not that return. You return not home, but mrityu samsara vartmani. You return to the vartma, the path of mrityu samsara, the path of the cycle of life and death. You return to birth after birth after birth. You having died, so nivartante means having died, one stays on this so-called treadmill. In fact, a better example of a treadmill, you ever see these mice on the wheel? A mice or a hamster on this wheel, they keep running and running and running and running and running, and you don't get anywhere. And if you go to the gym and get on a treadmill, it's exactly the same thing. You run and run and run and run, and you don't get anywhere. That's a good metaphor for life. We run and run and run and run. And in one sense, we don't get anywhere. Obviously, in some senses, we do get someplace. In a worldly sense, you've come a long, long way, right? Oh my gosh, think of where you were 20 years ago or more. My gosh, how far we come in life with our effort. We come so far in life. So in that sense, in a worldly sense, it certainly is not true that we're like hamsters on a treadmill. We are making progress. Of course, our progress can be a little bit, you know that board game, Chutes and Ladders? Sometimes life can be a little bit like that, in the sense that you can make a lot of progress and then, oops, crash. Some of you had that experience several years ago when the stock market did that. You make a lot of progress and suddenly that progress is wiped out. That also happens. But the point is that it's not true to say that life is merely like being on a treadmill in a worldly sense. We can make progress. Of course, we also have setbacks. Both are true. But there's another sense in which life is absolutely like a treadmill. Absolutely like that hamster wheel. In what sense? What are you ultimately seeking in life? What is it that we all ultimately seek in life? Perfect contentment. What is perfect contentment? Contentment that doesn't go come and go. That is, it's not moments of contentment. Uninterrupted contentment. Perfect peace. Ultimately, that's what we seek. So we got born some years ago, and since our birth, we've been working hard to find that perfect peace, to find that unbroken, uninterrupted contentment. Have you gotten there yet? There's a treadmill. That's the treadmill. We spend a lifetime seeking that perfect peace, that unbroken contentment. Or shall we put it back in these terms? One can spend a lifetime seeking God. But it can be a lifetime on the treadmill. How is that possible? So it says here, aprapya mam nivartante mrityu samsara vartmani. You return to the cycle of life and death. Which means that treadmill continues, not just in this life, but life after life after life. How can that possibly be that in spite of our effort, we can make progress in a worldly sense, we might not make progress in a spiritual sense? How can that possibly be? And the answer most of you understand very well. You're not going to find it on a treadmill. How will you find that one? In fact, you'll find that one when you take a few minutes to get off the treadmill. As long as you're on the treadmill, and I'll make this point very clear, and we'll end our discussion with this point. As long as you're on that treadmill represents a life of striving, correct? The treadmill means a life of striving. As long as you're on a treadmill, as long as you're engaged in a life of striving, you will not find what you're looking for. Why? A life of striving means where are you looking? Out there. But obviously what we're looking for is not out there, it's in here. As long as you're on a treadmill, you're looking out there. You're looking in the wrong place. When will you find what you're looking for? When you get off the treadmill and look within. Now, just a last comment here. Getting off the treadmill does not mean that you have to leave your family, leave your profession, leave your home, go up in the Himalayas, sit in a cave and meditate. That's not the point. You get off the treadmill to make a discovery. That discovery may take 5 minutes. You make the discovery and get back on a treadmill. No problem. If you enjoy the treadmill, then be on a treadmill. That means if you enjoy conventional life, there's no problem. But the point, and the very important point is so long as your attention is focused merely on worldly activities, you will never, ever make this discovery. To make this discovery requires, demands, withdrawal from worldly activities. Like what we've done this morning. Isn't that what we've done? Right now, you could be at this Patel market buying your groceries for the next week. That's worldly activities. You're not. You could be doing any number of things this morning, worldly activities. You're not. You're sitting here in this Gita class. This is what's required to make the discovery. This is getting off the treadmill for the sake of making this discovery. So this is what one does when you have shraddha, when you have an open mind, and when you have a commitment to make that discovery. Good. We'll end here. The next two verses 4 and 5, I suggested before, are some of the most amazing in this entire text. And we'll see that in our next class. There was one question that came in our question box. There's a question box up here. You're always free to put in questions. The question is the word Hindu used anywhere in our scriptures? Now, the idea of this question box really is questions on our Bhagavad Gita class. We do have satsang on Sundays. We'll have satsang again this coming Sunday. So in Sunday, I can take this in great detail. The short answer, is the word Hindu used anywhere in our scriptures? The correct answer, of course, is no. If you want to find out why that's so, come join us in our satsang tomorrow at 6 p.m. I remind you, Tuesday evening at 7:30, we've just begun our new Vedanta class. You're welcome to join us. Thursday evening, we've just begun our intermediate Sanskrit class. You can also join us for that. And in 2 weeks, I mentioned that Navaratri is coming. Our celebration here will be, we'll celebrate Vijayadashami, and we'll celebrate it 2 weeks from today. So a week from Saturday, we'll have a nice program, some puja, chanting, and a nice discourse. We'll also be enjoying prasad after the program. So if you're planning to come, there's a sign-up sheet over on the counter. Please sign up to bring a dish of food. Library will be open after class, and we'll end with our prayers.